Please go ahead.
Yeah, but, well, people are pretty reluctant here to get started off, yeah, so I thought I'd give it a go. The point was the introduction of technology and the rest of it within class society, particularly within capitalist society, is that it's only introduced if it's profitable. That's the difficulty. If it's not profitable, then stay the same. So how do we get all that in pushing forward for these changes? The only way I can see it around it, this bit of a dilemma, I won't call it a problem, this bit of a dilemma is to really push wages struggle, because the increase in wages means the more likelihood that technical changes are going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like your opinion on that, Adam.
Okay, I'm not saying that we should campaign to apply all modern technology. I'm saying we should champion the knowledge aspect of technology. As you say, under capitalism, new technology is only introduced when it's cheaper than employing wage workers to do it. And so in that sense, in fact, capitalism even holds back some the application of some new technology. My general point was that technological advances are in the interests of the working class to be applied in a future socialist society, because that will make things easier. I don't think we need to get involved in campaigning within capitalism for new technologies. Though I take your point that one reason for the introduction of technology will be if wages rise, it then becomes less expensive for the capitalist or the capitalist employer to introduce technology.
Do you want to come back on that, Brian?
No, not really. No, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah, so, Mike, let's have you now.
Right, thanks. Yeah, a thought that popped into my head was that quite a lot of technological advances, especially some of the really big ones, have come about during war. Nuclear technology, of course, came about in the 40s especially, and sort of culminated in the bombings on Japan. And I think the internet was sort of a military discovery, or some big parts of the internet or email. So Adam or anyone else, I was wondering if there was anything in particular about war which sort of spurs on technological development, especially in capitalism and, possibly in earlier societies. And of course, that wouldn't be a spur of technological development in a socialist society. So yeah, I was just wondering if how sort of war impacts on technology in a sort of, a Marxist framework. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, in one of his letters explaining the materialist conception of history, Engels gives the example of armies. So, when the weapons changed, then the whole structure of the army changes. And he's using it as when technology changes in society generally, the whole society has to change. So I don't think it's just in modern times that war has been a spur to technological advance. But I mean, in a war, of course, the capitalist class is everything is at stake, so they're prepared to throw everything at it and develop weapons of destruction. It's true that there are other less destructive uses of what's discovered in war. But I mean, the argument it must be that we've now reached the stage where technology can provide plenty in a socialist world. So even without any further advance, socialism is possible. But I would think in a socialist society, people will still want to lighten work of getting what people need from the rest of nature. But I mean, we won't be under the same sort of pressures as today under capitalism.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, cheers.
Howard, please.
That's Richard. Just an observation with regard to the final comments in Adam's talk. This month's Socialist Standard has got its usual 50 years ago section in which it quotes from an article written in the Socialist Standard that came out in 1970, the title of which was A World of Abundance. I think it was the first standard to actually go into detail on the way in which technology would be able to, was already able to produce an abundance if it were applied correctly. And there was an article in that edition by the late lamented Ron Cook called Progress Perverted. And that sort of really sums up our position, doesn't it, on technology and capitalism. It's progress and therefore it's welcome. But what capitalism tends to do is use it for its own purposes and therefore pervert it. I thought that that was a very good summing up of the socialist position on technology.
Yeah, I agree.
Good.
if I could just very quickly come up. Yeah, I'll put a link to the Progress Perverted article in the text channel afterwards.
Okay, Bill, let's try you again. Can't hear you, Bill. Anyone else hear him? Sorry.
Usually when there's a problem with the mic is that the mic is turned up away from the mouth, right? Or you've got a switch on, an on and off switch on the mic. You need to check that, Bill. Make sure that the mic, first of all, is in line with your mouth. And secondly, make sure that the on and off switch is correct.
Yeah, I think Brian's got a more fundamental problem than that. So, as far as I can see, I'm at the end of the queue now. So please don't hold back any more, comrades. Let's have some more contributions. Please go ahead.
Adam, can you elaborate on your reference, which would probably be found controversial, certainly by people outside the party, but who may be sort of broadly sympathetic with us, your comment on GM crops?
Okay. I mean, what genetically modified crops are doing is producing faster what happens through artificial selection. I mean, most of the crops that exist today are not what they were before humans intervened. Humans have intervened over centuries and longer to adapt wild crops to things to suit their needs. So GM crops are doing is taking a shortcut to bring about this result. And I don't see anything wrong with that. One of the things that could be done is to enable some food crops to be grown under hotter or colder or wetter or drier conditions, which means that more could be grown in the world. I don't see any objection to that. Now, whether it's the things which Monsanto is alleged to have done to introduce a killer gene so that these things can't really produce them, I don't know whether that's true or not. But I mean, that's the way in which this technology could be misused under capitalism. So I say we drawing the distinction that we are drawing here between the technology as knowledge and its application or misapplication under capitalism. What I was defending was this is an advance in scientific knowledge, in understanding of technology, and that it can be used in a socialist society, even if under capitalism, as we know, it's not the only technology that can be that can be misused. I mean, it's the same with the other example I gave of gene therapy. This could eliminate all sorts of diseases that hereditary diseases which humans have, but under capitalism, it could well be misused to have, you know, designer babies and so on. You can't object to the technological advance, but you can object to any misuse which we made of it under capitalism, which I think, as I say, illustrates how capitalist class society is in fact a fetter and worse on technology, in that one of the things which socialism will do will be free technology from these fetters and misuse, and to allow it to be used rationally to make human life easier.
Brian, please go ahead.
Yeah, to come back. You just about answered it there in the last part anyway. My question is related to the advance of technology in a socialist society. Do you think there'll be blue sky reasoning throughout the scientific community, so that technology is advanced as much as possible? The only restraining factor being how quick society as a whole will pick up on the application of technology.
Well, I mean, I think in a socialist society, scientific research and technical advance will continue. I don't see any objection to things like space research in a socialist society. I mean, obviously that won't be the priority, of course. When socialism is first established, the priority is going to be growing enough food, getting enough clean water, and decent living conditions for people. But once that's been done, then I think yes, socialist society will still concentrate on scientific research. But once again, its application can be decided, by society, yes.
Dougie, let's hear from you.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at how science operates in capitalism, a lot of it's to do with patents and things like that, and people making money because they can patent a drug or they can patent a chemical process. And even when they give the information for the catalyst in a chemical process, they don't give all the information so other countries can't copy it or whatever. There'll be shared information. There won't be patents in a socialist society. Another point I'd like to make is capitalism's brought about an amazing way people can communicate technologically, with the internet and things. Do you think the internet coming about leads possibly to better understanding of the case for socialism in the future? I know it's been going quite a while, but I mean, it is a tool that we try to use, obviously.
Well, we are using it.
Yeah, we're using it now, I know.
No, in fact, there's a talk on this tomorrow, isn't there? There's a talk on this tomorrow, isn't there? I think tomorrow morning, which will go into this in more detail. But I mean, my talk wasn't just about technology application today under capitalism and under socialism. It was about whether about the materialist conception of history, whether the explanation of moving from one society to another, how it can be explained in terms of technological progress. Because I mean, the case that a society depends on how its members are organized to survive in the rest of nature, I mean, I think that's a valid argument, and a strong case can be made out for it. And I think that Marx, we'll come back to what we've just been talking about, he thought that it would, the same argument would apply for the same materialist argument would apply in the change from capitalist society to socialist society. In other words, that the technology would continue to develop gradually, but at some point there would need to be a class which would champion it against It's, well, in this case, it's misuse by those who own the means of life. And as I say, my talk wasn't just about technology today.
I could just jump in. I suppose I could put myself in the speaking queue, but there doesn't seem to be anyone in there at the moment. So I was just thinking what you're saying there, Adam, is we could be at one of these points in history when you consider the fact that what the world needs at the moment is a vaccine for COVID-19. Now, most of the major pharmaceutical companies aren't involved in vaccine research because basically there's no money in it, there's no profits. It's far better to you get more of a return on your investment on something that basically rich people can benefit from, which aren't terribly important. You know, they're not necessarily life-saving, but and so you could say that the majority of the world are crying out for this terrible disease, to get rid of that disease. But the capitalist class have other priorities. It's just a thought I'll throw in. Howard's next. Anyway.
Can I just mention Ron Cook again, who I mentioned earlier as the author of that article called Progress Perverted? Mention him because Ron was one of the original organisers of the Faircroft, the Birmingham summer schools, and also mention him because he published his own pamphlet, if you like, little book called Yes Utopia, which deals with a lot of the topics that have come up here this evening, and which, you know, if people haven't read are interested in, is well worth getting hold of. Not sure if the party is actually providing copies at the moment, but sure it wouldn't be too difficult to find. Yes Utopia by Ron Cook.
Yes, that was quite good, but there's some personal ideas in there, I think. Wearing paper clothes and all women living together, visiting each other and so on. But anyway, no, basically it's all right, I think. But to return to this question of the vaccine, I think the criticism of capitalism will be that they didn't foresee this happening, so they didn't invest in it happening. What is happening now is that the pharmaceutical companies are agreeing to develop a vaccine at cost price. Whereas this is basically, if you like, a publicity exercise for them, but even that is done in secret. I think it was the foreign minister got up and denounced Russia for trying to hack into the research going on in Oxford. I mean, that was an illustration of the fact that there isn't worldwide cooperation to develop a vaccine. It's competition between different different companies, and all these different companies are keeping their research, even if they're only going to charge cost price for it. They're keeping it's secret, no doubt, for some later stage to make a bigger profit out of it. Once again, an example of how capitalism is a fetter on the proper application of technology.
Sorry, I'm a bit lost now. Is it Doug, are you next?
Just talking about the coronavirus, they reckon it spread from bats, and it probably spread from bats to pigs and then from pigs to humans or whatever. In the 1918 flu pandemic happened the same way. So 100 years and they haven't learned anything to stop that kind of thing happening, right? You know, the way they had the meat markets in China and things. Yeah, it's true that vaccines aren't profitable for pharmaceutical companies, but they're spending millions trying to get, well, billions trying to get a vaccine because they want to get one, but they're not sharing the information, right? You know, although there is probably some sharing between some countries, but it's a bit like patents, as I said, right? You know, they keep things secret, right?
Steve Finch, please go ahead.
Thank you. Adam, really interesting talk. Just an idea, though. Is the socialist revolution going to be different from previous revolutions in terms of technology? Because we don't have individual workers don't have access to technology in terms of developing it, as in the past, technological development were in a feudal society were being carried out by capitalists unknown to each other, and you know you've ended up with sort of at times unconscious activity, which has then led to break the bounds of feudalism. Well, we don't have that. We've got to be active in a purely ideological manner, haven't we? We've got to be putting forward this idea that we've got the technology now. It's been screwed. We can't develop our own technology within capitalism to break the boundaries. So I don't know. Is it a slightly different position that we're faced with?
But the capitalists, the bourgeoisie, when they became factory owners, they developed factory production. But eventually, that chapter of Marx, which is chapter 15 of Capital, but incidentally, that chapter and the other one I quoted from chapter 7, they don't mention the theory of value, the economics at all. They're just descriptive things. But in the chapter on the development of machinery, Marx explains how in the end what happens is that the capitalist factory owner becomes redundant. Because the whole of production is controlled from top to bottom by people paid by paid wage workers. I mean that's the key role that the working class play in production today. It's not so much individual workers, but it's the whole collective workforce that is the important factor in. In production. So what we have to do is to take the means of life, the means of production, out of the hands of the capitalist class into the hands of society, so they can be used to serve the interests of everyone.
Richard,
you want to come back? Okay, Steve.
Yeah, just very quickly. But the thing is that's a different thing, isn't it? That we've got to do it. We have to do it consciously, whereas these technical changes in the past have gone through unconsciously in a lot of different places, and then they all just come together and boom, suddenly we stuck with we developed capitalism. I'm not saying that the capitalist class didn't then act together to gain political power. Obviously, they did. Yeah. But I'm looking at it as initially there wasn't this sort of there wasn't any need for them to be conscious about what they were doing. They were just pursuing their own individual interests.
I mean, that's the whole point. That's what they were doing. They were developing a particular technology, but they came up against the restrictions of the society in which this developed, guilds and things like that. So they had to become conscious in the end, and they had to organize politically to take control of political power, take it out of the hands of the people who were benefiting from the old technology. I think that parallel still applies as far as the working class is concerned. We've got to take political power out of the hands of the capitalist class and use it to make the means of production the common property of society. It's even the capitalist struggle in the end did become a conscious struggle for political power. I mean, that's what Cromwell was about. It's what the Glorious Revolution, the Bill of Rights. It's what the French Revolution was about. These are all conscious political things to remove obstacles to further capitalist development.
Okay, thank you.
Go on.
Just to pick up on where Dougie left off, the reason why there's this reluctance for cooperation and finding a vaccine is, first of all, it's well known amongst the scientific community and Big Pharma and all the rest of it that the coronavirus 19 is going to be here for quite a while. It's not going to go away in the next couple of years or so. It's going to drag round and round and round for quite a few years yet. So there's still a possibility of sales to be made from the pandemic, right? But the main thing is, whichever nation state that comes up with the vaccine first, that puts them at a competitive advantage, especially when the economy is in a downturn.
Paula McEwen, please go ahead.
Thank you, Adam, for that talk. Hello, comrades. This might be just a little bit off topic, but you know how we learn that the materialist conception of history is that, you know, we started with hunter-gatherer, we moved to slavery, then feudalism, then capitalism. I think there's something a bit missing there, because I have to say it's because I watched a BBC documentary, actually, on slavery and about how Britain's wealth is founded on the slave trade. So we sort of like started in like the 18th century in the slave trade, and there was so much wealth produced as a result of that that we were then able to become a capitalist, you know, we became the most successful capitalist society on the planet, actually, you know, in Victorian times. But it was all built on the wealth that had been gathered during the slave trade. So I would just welcome any comments that anyone wants to make about that.
Actually, Marx, in when he says, what are the successive progressive epochs, economic epochs? I mean, the first one is what he calls Asiatic society, which is where you have an empire which controls irrigation, but you still have communal villages and so on. And then he moves on to ancient slave society, which is in, you know, classically in ancient Rome and ancient Greece. And then he moves on to feudalism. Now, I think you can give an economic explanation as to why feudalism developed out of ancient Roman society, but I don't think you can give a technological explanation. I would have thought that the technology in ancient Rome was higher than it was in feudal society. So, I mean, the explanation as to why feudalism came would be that the slave society became unproductive or overstretched or something like that. So I think the basic order of social evolution is original communism, class society, capitalism, and then socialism. Now, what you say about slavery? I mean, the slavery that developed in the West Indies and in the United States wasn't different, I think, from the ancient slave societies, because they were still producing for the market. So the slaves were producing commodities, which wasn't the case then. But I think it's, nobody can argue that it wasn't the case that. Marx in the other part of Capital, when he's discussing what is translated as primitive accumulation, but is better translated as original accumulation, so how the money capital was accumulated, which set off the Industrial Revolution. He does mention the slave trade as one of the things which helped this. So yes, I think that's undoubtedly true, that the transatlantic slave trade and the slave system in the West Indies and the Americas did help the development of capitalism, but I think it was a different type of slavery from what existed in in ancient Rome.
Okay, John, go ahead, please.
But my question in the speaking queue is just following on a bit from what Paula said about how capitalism developed under conditions where there was also slavery going on and empire building, that you can have like one basic economic formula, but several quite different kinds of technology at the same time.
To come back to the question of plantation and slavery, I think the plantations, tobacco and sugar, couldn't be operated by free labor. So I mean, before they had slaves, they had indentured laborers who were temporary slaves, if you like. They were to work there for at least 7 years. And when they abolished slavery in the West Indies, they had to import indentured laborers from India, and from 1838 to 1917, about half a million people were transported from India to work on the plantations in the West Indies. So you could say that, insofar as the plantations were a technology, they could only be operated by forced labor. So, I mean, that would be an explanation in terms of, if you like, the materialist conception of history.
Wasn't it also like a thing that at that time in antiquity, they were mainly using slaves for like their own consumption? Like they just mainly had slaves doing the work for them, so they could get some. They weren't really like trying to trade as much then, right? Versus like in like the 1800s and stuff, they were mainly doing that to like trade in the world market, right?
Yeah, yes, that was the point I was trying to make, that the production from the plantations in North and South America and in the West Indies was for the world market. It wasn't for local production. So I mean, it was linked up with capitalism, which in one sense could even be defined as the world market. So lots of other places were producing for the world market, in the sense world market in the sense of not just one, you know, one country. I mean, capitalism didn't really become a world society till, I don't know, the turn of the last century, but there was a world market, and yes, I think that's right. The plantations were producing for the world market, but they could only be operated by some form of forced labor. It was either chattel slavery or indentured labor or inventions like debt slavery and things like that.
Yeah, I finally got around to reading The Right to Be Lazy by Paul Lafarge. I might have butchered his last name, but that's how I pronounce it. But like, he says something about like them like hating, like in antiquity they like hated work or something, and like so they had slaves do all the work for them, and they like looked down on them for having to do it, I guess. Like, I thought that was pretty interesting.
No, that has been suggested. One of the reasons why the Roman Empire collapsed in the end, because they wanted all the work done by slaves, so that the people who technically weren't slaves became proletariat maintained by the by the state. I mean, I don't know how much truth there is in that at all, because society still had to be kept going. I suspect that even in ancient Roman times there were the equivalent of self-sufficient peasant farmers producing for themselves, as well as slaves working in mines and things.
Yeah, it kind of blew my mind. He had like some quotes from Plato in there and everything. I was like, whoa, these guys really hated work. Damn.
The ironic thing is, incidentally, that Plato became a slave for a short while. He was captured by some other Greek islanders, and he had to be bought. His freedom had to be bought.
Get out of here. I did not know that. I got to look that up. I got to read up on that now.
Paula, you want to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to come back on Adam's comment that modern slavery, we're going back to 200 years ago, was different from chattel slavery. But I'm struggling to see the difference. I mean, in the times of ancient Rome, they had people, they had the forced labour to build the roads and to build the monuments and the aqueducts and everything else. I mean, that was their means of production, was slave labour. And then you go to more modern times and, you know, the sugar trade, the rubber trade, that was all built on slavery. So what's, you know, those slaves were all producing something in the same way that the slaves in ancient Rome were. I mean, the slaves in ancient Rome weren't just there to fan the master and to serve the food. They were there building the roads and all the rest of it.
I mean, I wouldn't really say, okay, because the thing is, I mean, I don't know enough about this. I barely started reading up on this stuff really recently. I guess my guess would be that capitalism was just utilizing the slaves as like a means, like versus workers, you know, like versus like in antiquity, it was like only slaves. There was no like proletariat. There was no like capitalist basis to have a proletariat versus like the early days of capitalism when it was just being built. You know, it's, you had a lot of like, you still had a lot of feudalism, like, you know, it had been like broken up in like some places, but like, yeah, it like, man, I forgot where I was going. I'm gonna have to think about it. I'm gonna come back to this.
Yeah, incidentally, Paul, I didn't say that there weren't chattel slaves in America. They were chattel slaves. The slaves were the property of another person or another company. In fact, it was made easier because of most of the European countries adopted Roman law, which did accept. You know, one person could own another person, but I think the point is that the plantations were capitalist enterprises in the sense that the capital was invested in them.
That's what I was going to get at. It was, yeah. The mode of production was still capitalist.
Yeah, yeah, and that's right. And they were selling, they were producing for sale on the market with a view to profit. That wasn't the case so much in ancient Rome. So I think that the mode of production, if you like, in the southern states and you know, the West Indies has been called plantation capitalism, and it was something different as far as production is concerned, but of course not as far as the slaves were concerned. But in the end, of course, there are evidence that slave labor, you know, chattel slave labor for life, isn't as efficient as other forms of labor. If you give people a chance to by their freedom, they'll work harder than if they're going to be slaves for life. What's the point of you know, of working harder? So eventually, the, you know, slavery was abolished and was replaced by free labor, so-called free labor, which is, you know, workers working for a wage or a salary. Which in times of bad trade, of course, if you own slaves, you've got to maintain the slaves. But if you're employing, you know, free wage workers in times of bad trade, you just dismiss them, and they become the responsibility of the poor law to deal with. So there, you know, the free labor versus, or so-called free labor versus chattel slavery. It's in the end, I think, you know, free wage labor is probably more efficient, or was proved more efficient than chattel slavery.
Yeah, I'd pretty much agree. They were just like using slaves rather than wage workers within a capitalist mode of production versus antiquity. They were using slaves in a completely different mode of production itself. It wasn't capitalist. So it doesn't, yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah, yes, that was my point, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I still think, Adam, you've not really addressed my point, which is that the British, you know, the capitalist society that developed during the Industrial Revolution was built because, you know, we were really advanced in terms of getting to like an Industrial Revolution, if you like. Our Industrial Revolution was actually founded on the wealth that had been accumulated because of slavery. You know, that whole slave thing, it wasn't just the American plantations. It was the fact that You know, Glasgow's built on the slave trade. Liverpool's built on the slave trade. Bristol, London. Do you know what I mean? We, you know, as a nation, we owe a huge debt. Well, our society owes a huge debt to the slave trade. And I don't think that's properly reflected in this whole very neat materialist conception of history step-by-step guide, where slavery is something that happened in the past.
But, I mean, I accept what you say, and Marx accepted what you say, that one of the sources of the original accumulation of money as capital was from the transatlantic slave trade, and it did help the development of capitalism. In fact, there's a book written by Eric Williams, who I think became the Prime Minister of Trinidad, called Capitalism and Slavery, who makes the point that, you know, modern capitalism progressed much faster because of the money that was built up out of the transatlantic slave trade. And I mean, there was other sources of, you know, as well of plundering other parts of the world and so on. I mean, it's all in Volume 1 of Capital towards the towards the end, when he talks about the primitive accumulation of capital. That's what he's talking about. One of the sources of the original capital was from the slave trade. So there's no disagreement between us. We both agree on that.
Brian?
Yeah, just want to point out in regards to the finance of capitalist revolution coming out of the slave trade. Yes, some of it did come from the triangular slave trade, triangular trading, right? But quite a lot of the financing for the capitalist revolution came about from the compensation paid out by the British government to the British capitalist class for their slaves. You know, there was millions. I think it was 20 million at the time. Oh, not sure what that would equate to now, but I know it was a substantial amount. And that money could only be invested in capital.
I think in today's terms, the compensation paid to slave owners is far greater than the bank bailouts of 2008. So in today's money, it's many billions of pounds. And the government borrowed, they sold bonds which were to pay off this debt, and it's taken well over 100 years, I thought something like 120 years or so to pay for that.
I mean, but that's true, but that's talking about the 19th century. Marx is talking about the 17th and 18th century. That's when the original accumulation of capital took place. Because after all, the Industrial Revolution started in the 18th century.
With Britain, well, I haven't read some of Marx, but he does go into this, as you say, Adam, about going back to the 17th century in Britain, where you get the foundations of it, where you get the growing merchant class and, you know, political power shifts to those people as against to the landowners and aristocracy, etc. And that lays a foundation, especially, you know, the maturing of British economy, especially banking, the fact that you can, it's not like some common mill owner chap has to go and borrow money from an aristocrat. You actually have to, whoever, the rich person, you can do indirectly, get the money to start a business. All that matures and paves the way for the Industrial Revolution that comes along. So a number of things have to be in place first, not least for Britain in particular, having many, very mature merchant shipping system, and then the beginning of stocks and shares and the coffee houses and all this sort of thing, so that that laid the foundation for when the technological changes came with, in the mills, basically, having the big thing that we always talked about at school in history is, of course, textile production with the cotton. So it's a gradual process. I just thought I'd mention about, you know, in the 19th century, this the fact that there were so many slave owners, and there's all the records are still there, and some of them are quite small fry. They weren't all big wigs. There's just a, you know, one old lady who's got five slaves and she gets some money. And yeah, getting right off the point now, but I'm trying to get at it has to be some sort of structure. While the technology hasn't advanced very far, you've got the economic and social structure, financial structure in place before that liftoff, that takeoff could happen. And it happened in Britain several decades before it did in Germany, USA, etc.
No, good point. I agree with you. So it was all, the infrastructure was there already in terms of, like, we were, you know, we had the boats and whatnot, and we were merchants. And then slavery happened. And it was that then produced so much wealth that allowed capitalism to develop in such a fast way and so quickly.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I don't think it was just the profit of slavery that helped the original accumulation of capital. And of course, the other side of the thing is you have to have a landless working class as well as capitalists with money. So you've got all the enclosures and the Highland clearances and so on, which produced a populist class. So the you know, it isn't just sum of money that's necessary to start capital. You've got to have a sum of money and a landless working class to go and work in the factories. But I think what was happening in the 18th century, I mean, if you read that chapter, it's chapter 15 of Volume 1 of Capital, where Marx goes into detail how, you know, the factory system developed in England. First of all, you had people who were skilled workers with their own machines working under one roof. And then you had the division of labour, and then you had the steam and so on. So the actual technological factory system develops slowly. No doubt it was financed in various ways from money which had ultimately come from the slave trade, but not entirely. But I wouldn't want to say the whole of capitalism was based on the profits of slavery, but a large part of it was. And I think you're right, Paul. It did accelerate this process, but eventually once it got going, it's independent of that.
Okay, well, it's 9 o'clock according to my computer. We seem to have gone a bit quiet now. I wonder if you'd like to sum up, Adam, please.
Okay, thanks. It wasn't quite the discussion I was anticipating what I said, but it was still all the same interesting discussion on what technology is and how it's misused by capitalism. But I still make the basic socialist point has to be that we're in favour of modern technology because it has created the basis, material basis for a socialist society, and every technological advance makes this easier. So we should welcome technological advance, but criticise the way that it's inevitably used under capitalism. In other words, how capitalism misuses technology, and only socialism can use it properly. Okay.